Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon and welcome to Engage for Success Radio. And this is show number 153, Whole Life Engagement is the Missing Link to Employee Engagement. So today we're going to be talking about the missing link to employee engagement, according to our guest. I'm Jo Dodds, your host for today. I'm a social engagement consultant working with the Engage for Success movement, leading on digital. The Engage for Success movement is an inclusive movement committed to the idea that there's a better way to work by releasing more of the capability and potential of people at work. We spread the word about employee engagement and shine a light on good practice, widely supported across the UK, involving the public, private and third sectors. If you go to our website, engageforsuccess.org, you can use the link at the top to join our newsletter list. We send a newsletter out every Friday, Thursday on this occasion, as it's a bank holiday week. And if you tweet, please share your thoughts using our hashtag, which is #E4S with the number 4, to join the conversation. And come and join us in our LinkedIn groups. And also we have a Yammer group. If you go to engageforsuccess.org/Yammer, then you can request to join that group. All our social media links are at the top of our homepage. And if you enjoy our shows, or even if you don't, I guess, please do take the time to go to our iTunes profile and give us a rating. That'd be really helpful. It helps to get us found by the search engines. So today I'm talking with Mike Greatwood, who's Chief Executive of the DreamManagerProgramme.com. Mike and I first met when I accosted him at lunch at the CIPD conference last year, not once but twice on both days of the conference. We'd had such a great conversation on the first day about the Dream Manager program that when Kathy and I realized we were again sitting across from Mike out of a few hundred people, we realized we needed to talk to him again, much to his joy, as you can imagine. So Kathy invited him along to one of our core team meetings, and here we are with him on the podcast. Welcome, Mike.
Hi.
Really pleased to have you with us, Mike.
Pleased to be here.
So actually, when I said that you came to a team meeting, one team meeting, you're having to do two, aren't you? Because most of us were off sick when you came to the first one. So we're getting to know you well.
And it depleted as we went through the session, which I take it not to be directly related to my performance.
Oh, I forgot. It was the one where Anne was ill, wasn't it? Yes. Oh, yes. So, yes, it won't be anything to do with you, I'm sure. So start by telling us a bit about you and your background.
Okay. Well, I guess I kind of sit on both sides of the fence, or at least I have done in terms of my professional career. So my background is in business. So having been managing director, chief exec, general manager, having all sorts of leadership positions in a FTSE 100 tech company, got involved in a couple of startups, a couple of turnarounds, so quite a mixed corporate and mid-market career. My last role in corporate was actually as a HR director for a FTSE 100 company. Where I guess I got to hone my interest with or engagement with the employee experience, as well as having run P&Ls, which I guess gave me a bit of business credibility when starting to talk to leaders, budget holders, et cetera, about what they're trying to do with their people. Since then, I've run an executive coaching and consulting practice, again, working with leaders, directors, boards, CEOs of FTSE 100, 250 and mid-market companies.
Lovely.
And now I'm obviously heading up the Dream Manager program.
Yes, and that's how we bonded at the conference, wasn't it? So tell us a bit more about the Dream Manager book and what the book is, and we can sort of delve a bit into it from there.
Okay, well, the book, The Dream Manager, is written by a guy called Matthew Kelly. It's a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller. And it's written in the style of Patrick Lencioni's book. So it's a fable-based story, although it is based on a true company and our and Matthew's true experiences when working with organizations to try and help engage their people in facing various business and operational challenges they had, whether they were attrition or whether they were service level related or cost related or whatever. So the thing to say about it is a lot of Lencioni stuff is pure fable based. This actually comes from a real company that exists in the States. But it just plots the development of the program through the journey that that organization went through. And since then, that was about 7 years ago, Matthew and his organization in the US have been honing and developing and delivering the Dream Manager program service to the likes of Procter & Gamble, McDonald's, lots of other organizations across the US, mid-market, small and large companies.
And what's the sort of overall premise of the book, the story?
Well, it's really about identifying that if you want to engage your people at work, you've really got to get them engaged with their lives first, and you cannot separate the two. So it's about helping people understand, or organizations understand, I suppose, that if you want people to do something for your business, you've first got to help them do it for themselves. Because if you expect people to rock up at 8 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning, really juiced, on fire, and giving you all of their energy and focus, if they've got challenges, issues, or stuff that's going on in the rest of their life that is either distracting them or they're just sort of passively surviving in life, then they're really not going to give their best at work. And it's really the premise that you've got to look after your people first, because if you look after them, they're going to look after you, and that kind of reciprocity. And so the story and the program is all about helping people become people and supporting them to be people, and knowing that you as an organization are going to get the payback if you do that.
Yeah. So we'll explore that a bit further in a moment, but how did you get involved with the Dream Manager program in the first place?
So I was referred to the book and read the book, and I thought, wow, this is great, but how do I apply it to businesses, particularly over here? It's an American book written by an Australian-American for an American market. But I picked up the phone to these guys and said, okay, what are you guys doing in Europe? Expect them to say, okay, you need to go talk to these guys or that company or this organization. But they said they weren't doing anything. And I thought, well, that's just not right, because there is a massive opportunity here. I mean, I've sat on board having a lot of people, or responsibility for a lot of people, wondering why we can't really make inroads into the engagement play, and as it plays out in all organizations. I thought, actually, this can do that. This does do that, because it unlocks that potential, that discretionary effort, by putting them first. So I jumped on a plane, went over and saw Matthew and his guys and the company in Chicago, and basically we agreed that I would bring this back to the UK and Europe. And I've spent the last few months adapting it and honing it for the European and the UK market.
Lovely. I read the book actually last week in preparation for today, and it's a very easy read. It's very enjoyable, and definitely one to recommend. And even better when you hear that it is based on a real life company, because you sort of often read those sorts of books and think, yeah, that sounds perfect, but in the real world.
Absolutely. If you want to go search that company, go Google the company. The company's called Jancoa, J-A-N-C-O-A. The two owners, they live it and breathe it, and there's loads of stuff on them and how they really do put their people first. I mean, they're a cleaning services company. It's not high tech, it's not high grade, but they really, you know, they talk about taking the dead end out of dead end jobs and letting people live their lives. But you're right. I mean, Matthew says that if you don't get into the book after 25 pages, then he's missed his opportunity and he's failed as an author. But it does kind of draw you in, but it is based on a real company with real issues. Some of them have been adapted from other experiences and other organizations to give it some flow, but essentially it is, you know, it is the Jancoa story that Matthew developed in conjunction with them when he was working out with them.
Yeah. So we said that to have people engaging in their work, they need to be engaged in their lives. So tell us more about what the Dream Manager program is all about, and what that actually means. What does being engaged in your life mean to the average person? Or the non-average
person? Well, for lots of people, for a lot of people, it's really about starting to identify what they want to be, do, have, and experience, and then starting to make progress towards that. So humans have these two unique or innate abilities. We have the ability to choose, to make choices, and we also have the ability to dream. So we have the ability to look into the future and imagine a future that we want to be, do, have, and experience, and then bring that future back to the day, back to the present, and start making actionable progress towards that. And we know that if people have a very positive perspective on their future, they're 50% more likely to say they're very happy with their today. Now, for many people, all of us pretty much, a lot of their today is work or work-related. We spend a lot of time about there. We spend a lot of time thinking about it. We wake up thinking about it. We go to bed sleep thinking about it. And so if you've got people looking forwards and have a positive perspective on what their future might look like, and they are making progress towards it, then they're 50% more likely to be very happy with what they're doing right now, right here, at this moment in time. And so the premise is all built on the fact that we help people look forward, and then we give them tools and techniques and tactics to undertake to help them become what we would describe as better versions of themselves, which is really just about progression and moving forwards. Because for many people, it's not about having to reach your dreams or reach your goals, if you want to call them that, or aspirations or hopes. We feel positive when we are making progress towards them. We are progress-seeking creatures. So we don't always have to get to them, but if we are moving towards them, then it gives us a sense of self and a sense of purpose and direction, if you like. And if you as an organization want to become the better version of yourself, then your people have to do that first. And that's really what the Dream Manager program is about.
And talk a bit more about that sort of personal progression. So I can see organisations, particularly the sort of more traditional organisations, being quite against this sort of idea because it's not about what happens in the workplace, you know, as such. But obviously there's an impact to it, and it's probably hard to sell into those sorts of organisations. But why is it so important to develop people personally to develop them for their work?
Well, I think the data is, you know, well trodden. You know, you guys and other people out there and all the research out there, you know, provides very tangible evidence as to why any business, whether you're a traditional old school, a Keynesian type business of the extreme, or whether you're a modern thinking, caring, nurturing organization, there's lots of economic reasons why you should do this. So whether you just want to tap into the discretionary effort, whether you want to tap into the earnings per share growth that the various surveys demonstrate is achieved if you've got highly performing, highly engaged people, or whether you just want to improve your service levels or reduce your attrition costs, let alone measuring the engagement in itself. So I think the organizations that are, let's call them old school, they're missing a trick. Because if you're a, you know, let's just take banking, if you're an investment bank and you're paying people the kind of money they're paying people, everybody else is paying them the same. Everybody else is working in the same pool. Everyone's working in the same teams for the same customers, making the same products or services and margins, same commissions possibly. How are you going to differentiate yourself as an employer of choice? Well, actually, if somebody felt listened to, thought about, and cared for, even though a lot of their dreams might need material, which might drive them towards a more materially focused career, people have a need for significance. And if you allow people to be listened to and heard and cared for, they will want to spend time with you. And I think a lot of the organizations out there who are not got their head up and they're not listening to the evidence and the data, whether it's Gallup or it's Deloitte or whether it's CIPD or whether it's Oxford Economics or it's all the stuff you guys do, or it's all the stuff Nietzsche and David does, well, you know, they're going to get overtaken and are being overtaken by organizations who are putting their people first because of that discretionary effort, because of the extra service, because even if it comes down to you answer the phone with more of a smile because you happen to be a bit happier. Now, that all sounds flaky, but the economic evidence is there, and it's clear for everyone to see, and you know, you guys know better than I do about which bits are key to talk about.
Yeah, and we talk, when we're talking about the four enablers and our engaging managers, about personalising how you deal with people, and I often share a story about my daughter's school where they teach them to treat people as you would like to be treated yourself, and I'm having a bit of a battle to sort of explain to her that it's about treating people how they would like to be treated, not
absolutely
how you would like to be treated. But it also makes me think of when we talk about that whole bring your whole self to work piece that's being talked about quite a lot. You know, should people be their true self at work, or should they be this sort of professional person? And clearly, I think from what you've said, you're talking about the whole self. Let's sort of talk a bit more about that. What does that mean? You know, it might be that you're getting to know a lot more about somebody than you ordinarily would do. How can that be helpful?
Well, I think it's important that we understand how other people operate in life. So if we want to communicate with somebody, how do they want to hear us? If we want to understand how to motivate somebody, well, how can we find out what does motivate them? And one of the ways we can do that is we can listen to them and you can talk with them and we can share stuff. So one of the things that, take dreams, it's just an artifact, an example. But if you understood what some of my dreams were, then you get a sense about who I am. And what happens at that point is you get invested in me and you get invested in my dreams. And our natural ability for humans or desire for humans is to help other people. So, you know, one of the things that's really important is we understand and appreciate that our people first and not widgets. A good friend of mine, Lucy Windsor, wrote a book called People Aren't Widgets. And it really just reinforces the fact that people are individuals. So why would I have a meeting at 4 o'clock on a Friday to a guy who's getting on a plane and going back to Rome because that's where his family is? And he can't leave until 5:30. Why would I do that? Could I not do that at 1 o'clock because it's important to support him? Why do I have to not listen to people when they're talking about their children? You know, if you want to get to the heart of people, listen to them talk about their children. Listen to them talk about their interests. Listen to them talk about their passions. Listen to them talk about their faith, what that means to them. And the more we understand about people, the more we can adapt ourselves to have a better relationship, have a more connected relationship, and actually, in a business context, get more done. So if I understand how to motivate you, or you understand how to motivate me, how likely is it that when we are asking for something, or we're sharing something, or we're tackling something together, that we're going to do it more efficiently? So bringing your whole self to work absolutely has a business benefit, because it allows the organization, the leaders, the managers, the peers, to operate and engage with us in a way that allows us to be people first, feel important, feel listened to, feel cared for, and then give them back the discretional effort. That's that social contract we call reciprocity.
Mm-hmm. So what does the program look like when you go into an organization? What sort of activities do you sort of work with them on as you implement it?
Okay, well, the implementation piece is really quite important because it's important to understand what the organization is trying to achieve. So it's as much about listening. So it might be there's some specific areas of focus off the back of pulse or engagement surveys, for example. I mean, how many times have people done engagement surveys and not much has changed over the years? And that doesn't work for me. And it didn't work for me as an HR director, and it doesn't work for me now. So we spend a lot of time making sure that we understand and plug into and connect what the organization is trying to do so that we can help best match the program that we deliver for them. But in essence, what we do with people and the participants is we take them through a 12-session program, and we help them start to look at what they want to be, do, have, and experience, and look at their dreams, their hopes, their aspirations. We give them some structures around how they might look at those. So we look at 12 areas of life, coincidentally. So we look at things like adventure, financial, legacy, physical, material, professional, intellectual, psychological, creative, and so on. And we get people to start to think about a life they want to do, be, have, and experience. And we know that when people do that experience alone and take 45 minutes or an hour to do that, they tell us that they feel 29% more engaged. That's pretty impressive stuff. The challenge is sustaining that through the course of the relationship that we have with those people. But we then help them work through, because, for example, money has quite a strong financial component to what people want to be, do, have, and experience. We take a couple of sessions to help people look at their relationship and attitudes towards money. You could call that, if you're a CFO, you could call that finance for non-finance. You could call that budgeting and business planning if you wanted to. But we're putting the person first, and our customers and our clients are putting the person first authentically, which really comes down to that kind of dual-purpose learning. So the premise of that being that if you want to teach somebody a skill or train somebody in a skill, the likely take-up is circa 30%. If you want to educate them in something that is meaningful for their life, that they can adapt and apply to their work, the take-up is likely to be 2.5 times as much, so more like 70%. And that's a lot of what this premise is about. So we then help people look at what their own personality is. We do a light touch with a personality tool. We get people to look at their communication styles and the people in the communication styles around them. These are typically group sessions, group coaching sessions. We do them one-to-one as well. Then we help people look at their perspectives on diet, energy, rest, exercise, and so on. What drains them? What drives them forward? That includes people, by the way, not just the obvious stuff. Then we help people look at what their attitudes are and opportunities are for learning. And then towards the end of the program, and this is really quite important in terms of being authentically putting the employee first, we help them look at what professional mastery might look like and help them build a plan or a pattern for themselves to take their own careers or professional areas of their lives forward. So we take people on a kind of journey. It's very much for the individual to take responsibility and shape it for themselves. And our job is to facilitate that, if you like. But we, you know, what we also do, because it's really important for an organization to know what the results are, and this is before the groups start, we survey them. We survey them at month 6 to see what's changed, and we survey them at the end of the 12th session to see what progress they've made since then and feed that back to the organizations, because it's really important for an organization that they can be able to measure the differences, as well as measure them in their attrition or their SLA achievement or their conversion rate or whatever the particular metrics are they've got in their business.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
that's what we do.
So in the book, they employed dream managers within the organisation, obviously as part of the story, and were sort of working with them on an ongoing basis. Clearly, you're going in and delivering something with a sort of time limit to it. How? Two questions. Never ask multiple questions, but I have two. One of them is how that then integrates back into the workplace with their line managers, and secondly, how do you then help to sustain that training moving forward?
Okay, well, if I forget the second one, you might have to ask it
again. I will come back, don't
I? Good, okay. Well, to answer the first question is, I've forgotten the first question now. The reality
about
is
how
that,
the leaders?
No, it's okay, I'm joking. The first thing to say about our dream managers, there are two ways that we can deliver this or our clients can have this delivered in the organisation. They can indeed, can train people inside their business to be internal dream managers. So they don't have to be supplied or provided by us. Yes, we train them. Yes, we certify them. Yes, we support them. But they can, if they choose to, employ or provide this or add this skill to their internal coaches or trainers or whoever they have got in the development pool that they think is appropriate to deliver this. So they don't have to outsource the whole piece. You know, they can take the kind of structural part of it, if you like. So that's how that works. And the second question again, sorry, was?
You see, you're not joking this time. It's about how you support the training moving forwards or the development after the training.
Okay. Well, the other thing to mention about the dream managers, of course, they are always on tap for people if they've got something specific they want to talk to. But what we do to sustain the value of this is one of the things that I remember both as a recipient of and a buyer of, is people go on a training course, they do a piece of development, however long, short, great it is, and they put it in the bottom drawer, and then they forget about it. And then about a year later, they come back to me and go, oh, yeah, I remember doing that. What was that all about? Again, flick through and think, oh, yeah, it's quite good, actually. And that's it. That we don't do that. We don't allow that to happen. So there's two things that happen when our participants go through the program. The first thing is the program follows a book, another of Matthew Kelly's books called Rhythm of Life. And so at the end of every session, we ask people to read the next 30 or 40 pages and have some reflections on it and then bring that back to the session. So that's the first touch point in between sessions. The second thing we do is we send between sessions, we send the next session's collateral, a session booklet, we send that to every participant's home because we think it's really important that people recognize this is not a work activity. This is something they do in work time. Obviously, the organization supports them economically to do that, but it is for them. What we also then do between sessions is we send them texts, we send them emails, we send them postcards, again, to their home, and we also set up closed WhatsApp groups for the groups they participate in. So we keep the program alive from session to session so that people get the value and they live it and they breathe it all week, all day, and from session to session. What we also do, the following session, the first thing we do with everyone is get them to check in on what's happened since and their reflections on the previous session. So we're really tying session to session. And the sessions are only 90 minutes, so I would call them, or somebody else would call them bite-sized. So they're not particularly invasive in terms of people having to stop what they do, but we do keep them alive between the sessions. In terms of the other part of your first question, which was about how the managers take this back, one of the things that we're very keen on, but it does depend on the landscape in the organization, is for managers and team leaders and so on to do it with their groups. not just separately. Yeah. Now, this is also a program that we, you know, we slot in as being part of leadership development programs, and levels of management might take this forward for that group alone. But we really see, I see it as a as an ex-HRD as being really beneficial if you've got a manager starting to listen and share what he or she's about and what some of their challenges about diet or rest or exercise or learning or financials. The group self-regulate anyway, so there's no issues there. And it does create a trust and a level of investment, as Matthew said, historically. Yeah. You just can't get any other way.
Mm-hmm. So we're just running into the last few minutes of the show. It goes by in a flash.
Wow.
What can people listening to this do now back in their organisations? Is there something you can, a little tip you can give them to go and try?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the key things is actually just starting to listen to people. So one thing I'd give people to think about, if they're a team leader or their manager, whether they're in, I mean, if they listen to this, the chances are they're in talent or they're in HR or learn development or some kind of people-focused role, is if they have any kind of teams they're involved in, is just start to listen to what the people around you might think. And so how might we do that? Well, one of the things we could do, so we have 12 areas of life that I talked about. There's 12 pieces of activity or content right now, straight away. So I would encourage people, if they've got a team meeting coming up or a QBR or an offsite or a review or a project meeting, whatever it happens to be, or even just their internal teams or they want to do it unofficially, is just before the session is going to take place, just send them a note or have a conversation with them and just ask them to pick five places they'd like to go to, they'd like to travel to. And that would come under our adventure heading. But we find that you might want to give people a bit of a nudge, because adventure sometimes means scary, sometimes it means fun, sometimes it means jumping off a cliff, sometimes it means paddling in water when they're scared of water, whatever it is. And just ask them to think about five places they'd like to go to around the world. No restrictions. If money was no object, time was no object, where would you like to go? Really dream without limits, think without limits, and just ask people to come with five places. And then when you're in the room, and you do this at the start of a meeting, by the way, you're in the room, just ask people to talk about the places they want to go to and start sharing. And you will create right there an energy in the room that you cannot create anywhere else. And the bond and the relationship and the increase of trust and the investment in other people will just go through the roof. And then you can do that with every one of the 12 areas that we've got. So I picked travel or adventure as a starting one because it's really quite a safe one. But if you did that and you spent 10, 15 minutes on it, the energy in the room that you will then get out of the meeting will be significantly higher.
Yeah, yeah, really, really helpful. And I'm glad to hear that I do these things naturally with the Engage Success team.
Well,
we can't stop ourselves chatting about such things. So that's probably why our team gets on so well.
Well, I think the key thing is, though, that when it's a group, is that you allow the people, allow everybody to have the voice. Because quite often the same people will be talking. Everybody has dreams. Everybody has places they want to go to. Everybody has
stuff. So...
or is that just you, Joe? I don't know.
So we're just moving into the last minute. I think you had an offer that you wanted to make for our listeners, which doesn't happen often. So off you go. Sounds good.
Yes, if you send me £5, I'll send you a £10 note. That's my offer. No. There's two ways that we're trying to get this message across to people. And one of the things that, as I said right at the start, or you've asked me right at the start, it's off the back of the book called The Dream Manager. So if anybody would like to get a copy of The Dream Manager, sure, you can go on Amazon, you can buy it, you can download it, you can do whatever you want and spend money. But if you drop Joe an email or you drop me an email, or which is mike.greatwood@thedreammanagerprogram.com, I'm very happy to send you a book for free, for you to look at and see whether that resonates in terms of some of the things you might want to do in your organization. If you want to have one of the things that we do right at the start is we do dreamstorming sessions, which really does light people up, that 29% more engagement I talked about. If there's an organization out there that's interested or curious about it, wants to spend an hour or 45 minutes just going through one of those, very happy to do that. And if you're a coach or a consultant, you've been listening to this and you've been thinking, well, actually, I could really like to get involved and do this for some organisations I know, or even some organisations for us, because we don't compete with our dream managers. They deliver all of our services. Then again, get in touch, drop me an email, because we have a taster session on the 8th of April over at Heathrow. We'll be more than welcome to see people come along, experience the dream storm, and learn a bit about more about what we do.
Lovely. Thank you. That sounds great, especially the offer of the book. As I say, I thoroughly recommend it, having read it in a couple of nights this week. So thank you, Mike. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Absolutely, no problem.
So just to let you know, next week is Easter Monday, so it's a bank holiday in the UK, so we don't have a show. And the following week, Joe Moffat is interviewing Eamon Tuomi of Motivi. I think it's pronounced like that. I can never remember how to do it. Motivi. And they'll be talking about the concept of happiness versus motivation. So we're looking forward to listening to that one. We'll catch you next time.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.